We got a busy day, as I told you. Richard Clark is with us now. Richard Clark is a famous guy. He warned America a long time, actually, before 9/11 about the problems that we would have with national security, and he was right. And now he has new warnings in his book, Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. He has served in the White House for Presidents Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, who appointed him as National Coordinator for Security, Infrastructure Protection, and Counterterrorism. He teaches at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, consults for ABC News, and is chair of Good Harbor Counseling. And he is the author also of Your Government Failed You, Breaking the Cycle of National Security Disasters. We welcome phone calls for Richard Clark. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Richard Clark, hello. Thank you so much for being with us. Oh, I got you on a different line. Richard Clark, thank you. Got the wrong button. Thank you very much. I hope other people don't get the wrong buttons. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. Cyber weapons. Tell me how in the world these work. What are we talking about here with cyber terrorism?
Well, it's not cyber terrorism. It's cyber war, and that's the name of the book. And it's also cyber espionage. So the U.S. military has created organizations to fight in cyberspace. One of them is called the 10th Fleet. That's in the Navy. It has no ships. One of them is called the 24th Air Force, and it has no planes. Their battle space, if you will, is cyberspace. What they do is destroy things in a war scenario by not using bombs, but by hacking into the controls for things like railroads and banks and pipelines and power grids, because everything is controlled by computers now, everything.
Yes.
And so if you can get into the control system for some of these things, take the power grid, you could cause a cascading power blackout. You could cause too much power to go down a high tension line and it physically melt it. You could cause a generator to spin at the wrong speed and fly apart. So you're 10,000 miles away on a computer, and you're destroying in physical space an object like a big generator by sending the right commands and hacking in, getting through all the firewalls and everything, getting into the control system for an electric power station. This is not science fiction. This can happen today. The U.S. military can do it. Other militaries can do it. They're not going to do it just because they can. But in a war situation, the next war, they will.
You write that this could come from another country or from a lone individual. Two questions. Where is it most likely to come from, and how do you protect yourself against a lone individual when it comes to cyber attack?
Well, lone individuals can't cause a lot of damage. They can do criminal things. I don't think a lone individual can do something as sophisticated as taking down an electric power grid. They can steal your credit card information. They maybe can get into your bank account. That sort of thing happens a lot. But what also happens is that people are engaged in espionage. So instead of hiring a spy to go inside some organization, you just hack into it and you steal the corporate secrets, you know, the engineering plans, the chemical formulas, the pharmaceutical formulas. The new F-35 fighter plane, which we're building, hasn't even taken off yet. And apparently China has stolen the plans for it by hacking in. So you don't need spies anymore if you can get inside the databases and just take out libraries of Congress full of information. We have cases where the amount of information stolen from an organization is equivalent to 10 libraries of Congress.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah. That's happening a lot, believe it or not.
Yeah. 20 to 30 nations, you write, have formed cyberware military units. Who are those nations? You mentioned China. Is China foremost here? And tell me what's in those units. Why do you call them military units?
Well, because let's take the 10th Fleet, which is a U.S. unit. It's guys in the Navy. It's men and women in the Navy wearing Navy uniforms, reporting to an admiral, It's very much a military organization. Now, they're going to focus on other navies and try to knock out other navies in a war situation by hacking into them. What other nations? Well, we know we do it. We know Russia has it, China has it, Israel has it. We even know little countries, poor countries like North Korea. CIA has testified in public that there are over 20 countries that have these new cyber military commands.
20 countries?
Over 20.
Wow. Let's start, you suggest, by thinking about what another nation could do to us that would be the worst thing. That might be to turn off the power grid and keep it off for weeks. So let's make that hard. How?
Well, I think there's a lot of things we could do. The first question is, you know, why is the electric power grid connected to the Internet at all? It shouldn't be. The control systems for the power grid should be totally separate. Now, if you talk to an electric power company, they will tell you that the control systems are totally separate. But what's happened every time the government and other people have tested this, they're able to get onto the power company's website. Maybe, you know, it has an account, you change your account, pay your bill, whatever. You get onto that website, and then hackers, skilled hackers, can move from there to the internal network of the company, and from the internal network of the company into the control network of the company. And this has been demonstrated time and time again. And the electric power companies have resisted federal government regulation with teeth to actually make them secure their systems. This is, you know, people in Washington hate new regulations, companies with money buy lobbyists, and the Congress is reluctant to put in effect new regulations on things like the Internet. Verizon just won a big case in federal court saying, and the court ruled that the existing laws don't allow the government to regulate the Internet. Well, if you can't regulate it, you can't secure it.
You write about the Bush administration's approach to cybersecurity driven completely by the private sector. When you would talk to him about this, the first question was always, what does John think about it? John Chambers, chief executive of Cisco and a major Bush donor. Has that changed now, or is that still the same and it keeps us from really moving ahead?
Well, I think in terms of the Obama administration, it's changed, but not in terms of the Congress. The big companies, the Microsofts, the Ciscos, the Verizons, you know, they throw around a lot of money. They hire a lot of lobbyists. They contribute to a lot of congressmen. And when you say, I'd like to defend cyberspace by having some new regulations to make the Internet service providers more secure, to make the power companies more secure, you're running into a brick wall in Washington.
And yet they've already seen what hackers can do, right?
Well, no one disputes, no one who's studied this disputes that all these things are possible. But when it comes around to doing anything about it, I mean, frankly, I love the Obama administration, but what they're saying right now is the Obama administration saying, we'll defend the federal government and the military, but the rest of you are on your own. You have to defend, you, if you're a company, have to defend yourself. Well, that's okay, but against a foreign military or against a foreign intelligence service, you know, that's what we pay our taxes for, is for the government to defend us against things like that. Mm-hmm. And right now, the Obama administration's policy is, regrettably, you're on your own.
Why don't you talk a little bit more about what already has been done? I don't know how many cases there are like this, but you talk about inside the pages of heavily redacted court documents from the case of a man accused of being one of al-Qaeda's chief recruiters is evidence the terrorist group has launched a successful cyber attack, including one against government computers in Israel.
Well, I think there are cases where we know that people in terrorist organizations have master's degrees, and even one case, a PhD, in cybersecurity. But the terrorist organizations so far haven't used cyber techniques to do destruction. What they use the Internet, just like everybody else does, for fundraising, for communications, but mainly for recruitment. The terrorist organizations have these really provocative web pages that apparently are very influential in recruiting young Muslim youth in some countries, disaffected Muslim youth in some countries. So far, we haven't seen a combination of terrorist organizations and cyber attacks designed to destroy things.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls. Richard Clark is our guest this hour. His latest book is Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. As you know, Richard Clark warned about how this country could be brought down by terrorism, as he said, maybe even 5 to 10 years before September 11, but people didn't listen to him. Maybe they are listening now. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email address is talk@WPR.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Richard Clark, our guest, his latest book is Cyber War, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. He's teaching at the Harvard University Kennedy of Government, now consulting for ABC News. He's written another book and, of course, achieved a lot of prominence in telling the country that he had warned about the threat of terrorism long before September 11. He served in the White House for Ronald Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, who appointed him as National Coordinator for Security, Infrastructure Protection, and Counterterrorism. Let's go to phone calls for Richard. Jane from Wauwatosa is first. Hi, Jane.
Hi, good morning. Thanks, Kathleen. I'm wondering if he had any resistance in getting this published and publicized.
Well, we haven't had too much resistance in getting it publicized because people are interested in cyberspace. And so there's a lot of concern. And you read the newspapers every week, the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times has a story about yesterday it was Google being attacked by China. There were some things that the government took out of the book because I'm still required, because of my past government service, to have a secrecy review of any book I write. So there are a few things that they took out, but the story is still there.
Who looks at that, a government review? Who's looking at it?
Well, you submit it to whatever agency you worked in last, and then they distribute it around to everybody. So I submit it to the White House, and then they send it out to CIA and the Defense Department, the State Department, and other organizations like that.
Huh. I would think, though, because you are Richard Clark, that maybe people are listening a little more, that they wanted this book to be published. Am I right?
There are a lot of people in the government who have encouraged me to write this.
Yes.
People in the government who think they're not being listened to on this issue.
Mm, interesting. Thanks, Jane, for the call. Milton from Madison. Hi.
Hello. We always think about the threat from cyber warfare as coming from, you know, some cyber unit, you know, of super hackers from another country. And unfortunately, I think where we are by far the most vulnerable is in the fact that we have farmed out national security software, I mean software which is used by the Defense Department and our intelligence agencies, to foreign countries. And this software is actually run for surveillance and collection purposes sometimes in these foreign countries. And some of these foreign countries, such as Israel, run very aggressive espionage efforts against the United States. It is undeniable that the State of Israel mounts an aggressive espionage effort against the United States, yet we let companies like Narust, Verint, and others do incredible things for us, or we hope they're doing incredible things for us instead of bad things for us.
Richard.
Well, I'm not sure I agree that Israel is waging an aggressive intelligence collection campaign against the United States. I think they're, in fact, a partner with the United States in a lot of intelligence things. But the caller's concern that software being written overseas is being used in the Defense Department and elsewhere, I think is a legitimate concern. We talk about that in the book, that if you have an operating system with 50 million lines of code, no one can know what all of those lines of code say. You can slip in a trapdoor into software very easily. And the Defense Department, the government, uses the same software that you and I use.
Thanks, Milton, for the call. We go next to Ken from Milton. Hi,
hello.
Ken.
I wonder if what the motivating factor is for the people that don't want to do anything about this. You know, do they have some kind of an assurance that if it does happen, that the government will be there and they'll make all kinds of money or whatever from this?
No, I don't. Happens? No, I don't think there's any such assurance. You know, I think there's a sort of ideological knee-jerk reaction among a lot of people in Washington and elsewhere against any new government regulation. You saw how the Bush administration wouldn't enforce regulations, left regulatory bodies without people on the commissions. I think regulation is not inherently bad. I like the fact that somebody is looking out for Chinese toys with lead paint in them so that our kids don't lick lead paint off the toys. You know, there are regulations I think we can all agree are good. But particularly the Republicans in Washington have taken this position that no new regulation on any subject is a good idea.
Thanks, Ken, for your call. Some lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation with Richard Clark, 800-486-8655. There's the other issue, which you are well aware of, is making people aware of threats that are sort of below the radar and become devastating because people haven't paid attention. You write, Richard, that Obama understands technically at a level far greater than you would think this issue. If he had 2 minutes to get briefed and someone served up a series of decisions, he would probably do some great things. He hasn't, because he's focused on problems that are biting now. This one isn't biting yet, or is still invisible.
Yeah, I think it is biting, but is invisible. Obama is a technologically sophisticated guy. His own campaign, you know, got hacked by the Chinese. So did McCain's. And so he understands the threat. I've talked to him about the threat when he was a candidate. And I think he understands it very, very well. But he's got a lot on his plate, and there are things like health care and things like nuclear weapons being developed by Iran that are pounding on the table, demanding action. And the people around him in the White House and in the national security apparatus understand those traditional issues, and they really don't understand cyberspace, many of them.
Mm-hmm. He has said, and people around him have said, that the issue of loose nukes is our greatest security threat. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. Loose nukes in the sense that Obama talked about it last week, which is highly enriched or partially enriched nuclear material that's not under good lock and key. Most of the nuclear weapons, all of the nuclear weapons, are under good lock and key. But what he was talking about last week were these things that come out of reactors, nuclear waste and whatnot, and sit around in fairly unguarded areas, storage areas, that could be used for a radiological dispersal device or some other terrorist weapon.
Hmm. And why did the Chinese hack his campaign and McCain's campaign?
How did they hack him?
No, why? What were they looking for?
They were looking for position papers on issues about Tibet, Taiwan, human rights in China. They wanted to know what Obama was going to do when he became president, what he was going to say in campaigns on these issues. They're very focused on issues about them.
Hmm. We go to Barb next from Verona. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I'm wondering if this is what you're promoting, but why wouldn't – are you still there?
We're here.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Why wouldn't we just take the electrical companies and the government agencies off the Internet instead of making Microsoft – be regulated?
No, I think that's exactly what I'm proposing.
Okay.
That we take the electric power grid controls completely off the Internet.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Obama plan for a smart grid, which has a lot of advantages in terms of energy savings, is actually going to put the electric power grid more into cyberspace than it is now.
Doesn't make sense. I mean, if we don't pay our bills online, who cares?
No, exactly. There are also other functions that probably shouldn't be connected to the Internet at all, but they are right now.
Okay.
And, sometimes people don't even know what's connected. In many offices, the photocopying machine is connected to the Internet and phones home to the manufacturer to tell it how it's doing. Elevators in buildings are connected to the internet, and they phone home to the elevator manufacturer
really?
And tell them how they're doing, so that there's remote diagnosis, and repairmen are sent out without anybody ordering them because the elevator itself or the photocopier itself has ordered a repairman.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Barb, very much for the call. Here's an email from Rick. Should there be a concern that your book may give U.S. enemies a blueprint for a cyber attack?
Well, we were very careful in writing the book not to do that, and we consulted with the government about what should be said and what couldn't be said about that. Unfortunately, hackers and other nations know a lot more than is in this book.
Hmm. Betty from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Debbie from Rapids?
No, Betty.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, there is a book out called Daemon that has it's all about having packets of software out on the internet that's hiding, and as the packets read headlines, they would become active. Is this something that we're worried about in real life, or is this totally fictional?
Well, the book Daemon, which I've read, and its sequel, which I think is called Freedom.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, great series. It is fiction. thankfully, it's that what happens in those two novels, and I recommend them if you like that kind of cyber fiction. They're great reads, but so far the kind of things that happen in those novels are still fiction. But you know, the kind of things that are happening now in cyberspace were fiction 20 years ago.
Thanks, Betty. Mike is next near Eastman. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a solution to the whole problem. I worked in communications for some time, and prior to 92, when research and development and universities were on a dedicated line from, for example, from point A to point B, the universities had their own communication loop for computers when they were big elephants, and they took a whole room to house these things. Then long about 92, when the PC, Microsoft came on in place, and the PCs were in a lot of homes, then they went on the regular conventional talk paths of phone companies. Now, why don't the government and the power companies have dedicated lines just between themselves? They could do it with fiber. It could be just nobody could hack in because it's a closed loop.
All right.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You know what you're talking about, and that is precisely what we recommend in the book.
Hmm. All right. Karen from Wanakee. Hi.
Hi. Mr. Clark has just mentioned this, and I hope that he will elaborate on the copying machine issue, because 60 Minutes, or excuse me, CBS Evening News this week had a segment on copying machines that were manufactured after a certain 2000 year, I don't know which one. Every one of them has a hard drive, and it has retained a picture of everything that has ever been copied on the machine. So, for instance, if you go to Office Depot or Lowe's or somewhere and make a copy of your passport, your driver's license, your tax return before you get a loan, et cetera, that information is on that machine. Those machines are often leased by a 2 or 3 year period and then replaced, and they showed how they are sent offshore because they're bought cheaply. And this investigation involved buying 4 random copiers from a place in New York before they were loaded on ships to go to Singapore and Argentina, I believe. And they downloaded all of the information on one machine, and it happened to be from the Buffalo, New York Police Department that had leased the machine. And there were all the records of arrests and sex abuse and so on and so forth. So I think we need to have the public be aware of this.
All right. Thanks, Karen, for your call. Richard.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. A lot of photocopiers have hard drives, and a lot of printers have hard drives. So if you print something at the public library or in a hotel or something, chances are that printer has retained the information that you've printed. And it can be hacked from the printer. It can be hacked from the photocopier. There was a fictional movie that showed how this could be done, where you hack into a photocopier of a competitor, and then you can see everything that's being photocopied. The bottom line here is that people have to be aware that a lot of things are connected to the Internet that they don't think are connected to the Internet.
I guess. I'm learning a lot this hour. About 15 seconds left. I think of you in many ways as our danger barometer. How quickly do we need to get on this?
Well, every day we're losing in the corporate world, we're losing our competitive edge to China. They're stealing things from our R&D. It costs them nothing to steal it. They go out and make it. And we're losing in that sense every day. So we don't have to wait for a cyber war to happen. It's a problem for us now.
Thank you, Richard, so much. Richard Clark, Cyber War is the book, The Next Threat to National Security and What to Do About It. It has just been published. Thanks to him and thanks to Jim Lehrer. Pretty good hour, huh? And thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production, and as always, for your intelligent and engaged phone calls. Don't go away. We have more to come in just a little while on the Ideas Network.